Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and BaltimorePositive.com. We're getting out doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. A lot of football going on right now. Luke's out in Owings Mills. That's happening. And we have the Raven Scratch-Offs to give away courtesy of our friends at the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. 5 years, 0% financing. And our newest sponsor, Jiffy Lube Multicare. Got my oil changed. And we're taking this thing on the road. We're going to be Fadley's on Friday. Next week, we're going to be at Costas on Tuesday. Then we're going into a heavy rotation. Pappas in Parkville. We're going to be at Coco's in Lauraville. We're going to be at Gertrude's at the BMA with Dan Rodericks talking about his amazing show in late November. The governor, at some point, we're going to get together with him in Annapolis. And then also next month, we're going to be at Curio Wellness, sitting down talking about the future of the cannabis space as well. So the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road doing stuff. And this guy would love a crab cake. I mean, if he ever knew one. He stuck out there in that landlocked Ohio. No one knows more about the Cleveland Browns and the history of the Browns. It has been there for all of the quarterbacks. It was a point he could name them. It was sort of like letters of the alphabet at one point. He covers all things sports in the Cleveland area. He is Right or Wrong fan out on the social medias. Daryl Ryder. I don't know if you're feeling yourself or not. You and I, like, have been going through this 25-year relationship where sometimes you have a bag on your head. Sometimes you're like, they're winning the Super Bowl. Sometimes you're like, we hired Hugh Jackson and it's going to go great. And then sometimes they win 27-0 with a semi-criminal quarterback and Schwartz, he's killing it on defense. And I don't know if you're optimistic or not, but certainly – you're coming in at a time where the Ravens are at the top of the pops and beating everyone and Lamar and Roquan. I don't know, man. These division games, this is a really weird week for the Ravens. The Ravens are never in front. They never have the lead. They're 7-2. They got two games, division at home. Best prosperity ever. Are you going to tell me the Browns are going to come in and wreck the party?
Probably not. No. By the way, I have the list of quarterbacks. Would you like to hear them all?
if you can learn how to do it like Andrew Dice Clay, and you can do a hickory dickory, if you could learn a cadence, or if you could sing it to Hang On Sloopy, Hang On, if you could learn how to do that. Who's the comedian in Cleveland that's so awesome? What's his name?
Mike Polk.
I've never had him on the show. If you have his number, man, slide it. Like, I've always wanted that dude on the show, but like, he could take the quarterbacks and turn it into something.
Billy
really
Joel's
fun.
We Didn't Start the Fire or something like that.
Or so, do it to honor someone I think you knew who I only knew from MTV, Michael Stanley, and do a Cleveland Rocks version of, you know, Kosar Sipe, you know, like do something with it, turn it into a rap. So I don't know, dude, but how many have there been quarterbacks?
The great PJ Walker was number 35.
Is that the guy that we beat a couple weeks ago, or was that a different
guy? That was Dorian Thompson Robinson. He was 34.
Okay.
John Watson was 33.
Listen, when I tell people we have experts on, like last week I had Tom Kelso on, former Maryland Stadium Authority chairman, and I know you have stadium issues, and say, yo, you're Cleveland. The place was on fire years ago. They wrote some great songs about it. But, I mean, here in Baltimore, we have the whole stadium thing. So, like, I try to get the best. I had John Waters on this week. Like, this segment is going to run next to John Waters. At some, so I'm getting great guests, but I tell people – that you know more about the Cleveland Browns than anybody this side of maybe Bud Shaw and Terry Pluto. It really has been an amazing journey for your franchise. And now Schwartzy's out there. And is there any sense that Deshaun Watson's going to bring a parade to Cleveland? I mean, I'm being honest with you.
Right now, probably not, because we haven't seen an elite player out of him. Sprinkled in a couple of games, right? Tennessee, he was fantastic, threw for 289 yards and a couple of touchdowns, got to sit the final 6 minutes out. Sunday against Arizona, threw for a couple touchdowns, no turnovers, only 219 or so yards passing. But again, sat the final 6 minutes out because the game was out of hand and they didn't want to keep him in.
Well, what's wrong with that? Play. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
But what I'm talking about is he's not doing what Lamar does. He's not doing what Patrick Mahomes does. And that's where you're putting up 300-plus yards passing and throwing for four touchdowns in a game. Like, we've not seen that version of Deshaun Watson. Or, you know, throwing for two touchdowns and running for two more touchdowns in the same game, which Lamar Jackson seems to do in his sleep. But you know, he's back from this rotator cuff injury. That whole situation appears to be behind him. Came out of the Cardinals game clean, according to the team. We'll obviously talk to Deshaun later this week. But, I mean, the whole rotator cuff injury was a six-week circus. Because is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Tried to come back against the Colts. And then you got national media flapping their gums, saying the guy's here collecting a paycheck. Well, the whole reason the Browns had to start Dorian Thompson-Robinson in that first game that the Ravens waxed the Browns 28-3 here in Cleveland was because Deshaun was trying to play with the rotator cuff injury. And then they discovered 2.5 hours before kickoff, oops, the arm doesn't work today. So, well, I guess the rookie has to start. And then he tried coming back against the Colts too soon and lasted one hit, five throws, had to leave the game. And so you got national people running their mouths saying, oh, he just doesn't want to play. He's just cashing his big fat paycheck. No, he wants to play. The problem is the arm wasn't working and he can't play, and he was trying to play. So, like, if you want to criticize him because he's not playing up to that contract, or you want to criticize him as to why he wasn't available for 11 weeks last year, to me, that's fair game. But when you just come out and start flapping your gums and saying, well, this guy's just collecting a paycheck from the Cleveland Browns, clearly you don't cover the team and you don't know what you're talking about.
Daryl Ryder covers the team, and he knows what he's talking about. He's right or wrong fan. He's out in the land of Cleve. Sometimes we give him a hard time. Sometimes we offer him breakfast in Tremont. That was before I got kicked out. And defensively with Schwartz and the transplant that a guy like he brings, right? Like I had Anthony Mitchell on the show this week. His son Keaton Mitchell's running for a lot of yards, and you know he's of that era. And you know, when I think of Schwartz, I mean, he and I've known each other so long. He's you know, West Baltimore, and we stay in touch. I haven't been in a room with him in a while. He went to Tennessee for 5 minutes there and went back home and did his thing. I didn't know that he was going to coach again. Like, I haven't had I'm not close to him like that. Like, I just didn't know anymore. It would have been maybe 20 years ago before the Detroit job. But he came in, and I thought that was a very interesting day to me. I think you may have sent me the text, or I saw it on your, you know, your Twitter or whatever. Hey, Jim Schwartz is taking the DC. I said to my wife, I'm like, Schwartz is going to go coach the Browns. I wonder how that's going to go. I wonder why that's attractive for him at this point. He's got enough money, health, all that good stuff, family, kids in college. I mean, I remember when they were this big. So it's been a long time. I find it inspiring when guys want to put the band back together and want to do it, because, you know, that job's not easy. You know, like, you fly in for that job and you're like, all right, it's Cleveland. How long is it going to last? You know, but Schwartz has been through this with Buffalo and Philadelphia. Tell me about the defense and what makes it attractive for Jim to take the job. And now what's, I would think he's maximizing the efforts there, right? Like, they're playing defense at a level that maybe you haven't seen in 25 years, right?
No, I've never seen a defense this good. I mean, look, the Browns just recorded their first shutout since 2007. You're talking over 200 games in between shutouts, right? They're number one in yardage, or fewest yards allowed. They're now starting to create takeaways. They had three of them Sunday against Arizona. They get after the quarterback. They're coming off a 7-sack performance. Myles Garrett is playing out of this world, even though he might, he's got 8.5 sacks on the season. And, you know, people will roll their eyes at that a little bit because he's not leading the NFL in sacks, but he's impacting the game like you can't believe. Just his presence on the field and the way Jim Schwartz is using him and turning him loose. The Browns secondary is incredible. Denzel Ward had a second interception. The guy breaks up a pass or two, it seems, every game. He's one of the best corners in the league. They got this youngster they drafted last year, Martin Emerson Jr., who is fantastic in the secondary. Teams don't even throw at him. Like Sunday, I don't think the Cardinals threw a pass in his direction. Like, they just don't even look his way because he's that good. In Seattle, he had an interception and a big pass breakup the week before. Greg Newsom, who's banged up right now, he's got a groin injury. We'll find out what he's able to do. He had to sit out this past week, but he's been one of the best nickel corners in the game right now. So the secondary is fantastic. Juan Thornhill, who they spent some money to get to come over from the Kansas City Chiefs, big vocal leader in that defensive room. But Jim Schwartz is allowing these guys to be themselves. And hey, here's an interesting concept for you. He figured out, I got a bunch of corners that can play man, so I'm going to let them play man. I've got defensive linemen that can attack the quarterback, so I'm going to let them attack the quarterback. Like, it seems like it's a novel concept here that I know what the skill sets of my players are, and I am going to scheme to those skill sets. And that's what Jim Schwartz has done, on top of the fact he's got really good people skills. As you know, he's got good people skills. He knows when to kick guys in the backside. And then in the same vein, he knows when to put their arm around him and tell him that he cares about him and he loves him. And, is rooting for him and things like that. So I think that all of those things, Nestor, have really helped Cleveland develop what I believe to be, I don't know if it's the best defense in the NFL, because there's some good defenses out there. But I feel like, Baltimore's got a really good defense. San Francisco's got a good, really good defense. But I would say that the Browns have a top three defense in the National Football League.
I mean, as bad as the Browns have been historically and drafting that way, right? Drafting in the top five, top eight all the time, whether it's the big money Warrens or you can name any of the players they've had. But the Myles Garrett thing and maximizing that, I mean, Cleveland's the exact place that if Lamar got drafted 6 years ago, they would have screwed it all up, right? I mean, like, so in saying that, with Myles Garrett and how things have been different there, talk about Watt, or you could talk about Roquan Smith, and the Ravens would have had to been really bad to draft Roquan Smith. I mean, it was a real theft, 54 weeks ago when they picked Roquan Smith up, because they would have had to been really bad to get a player of that caliber. But then you get that player. We have Clowney now, right? And I know you know what that's about. But you get those ones that they had an injury, things go wrong. And I go through the whole history of the league of top five defensive players and what you expect from that player. And then there's, like, we had Suggs at one point. But the Ed Reeds and the Ray Lewis's that are drafted a little lower, you expect a little bit less out of them. But when you're 1-1 and you're not a quarterback, and I mean, you're expected to be something that maybe you can't be in the case of Jadeveon Clowney. Where are you with Garrett in this? Because he might be going to the Hall of Fame. And more than that, I could make an argument, and the argument's been made, he might be the best defensive player in the league right now, this moment.
Yeah, I don't know if he's the best defensive player in the league, but he definitely belongs in the conversation. I agree with you. I think he's putting together a Hall of Fame career, and I think Jim Schwartz is amplifying that. What helps Miles get the attention now is the fact that the Browns are 5-3. They're winning some games this year. He's making impact plays at key moments in games. Younger in his career, he was making impact plays, but they weren't coming at key moments in the game on a regular basis. I mean, there were certain games, for whatever reason, he just absolutely eats the Cincinnati Bengals alive every time the Browns and Bengals play. He's had a couple of really good games against the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's, Tom Brady's last trip to Cleveland, he had a big strip sack that turned the tide in that game and allowed the Browns to upset the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home. So, like, he's had flashes of brilliance in key moments, but they haven't been consistent. But he was, stacking these impressive statistics. But now under Schwartz, he's making key plays in key moments. And I think that a lot has to do with Jim Schwartz putting his guys in position to do that. But no player in NFL history has had more sacks before their 28th birthday than Myles Garrett. He's got 84 career sacks already. And you look at some of the names that are on that list, there's no question. If he stays healthy and he maintains his current trajectory, Nestor, he is going to go to Canton, Ohio someday.
Well, I haven't talked to Schwartz, but I would say, hey, why don't you take that gig or whatever? They'd probably say, well, they have some special players. I mean, I see Myles Garrett and I see Javon Kearse, or I see, Haynesworth, players that he had that were great, great players on defenses, including the big guy in the middle that played angry in Detroit that kicked everybody's head in, Ndamukong Suh, right? Like, when you have a game-wrecking type of defensive player, that's kind of where it has to start. I mean, the Ravens transplanted Hart last year by getting Roquan Smith. They had Calais Campbell around for a while. Boy, the Ravens are playing great defense right now. But more than that, it is schematic, and it's about depth, and it's not 3-4 or 4-3. It's very hybrid, and it has to be hybrid when you're chasing Lamar Jackson around. I don't know what the benefit would be of seeing Lamar the second time around, but whatever that is for your defense and for Jim Schwartz and for the way the Ravens have been playing the last couple of weeks, where you really start to see an imprint of Todd Monken and no more of Greg Roman, and you really have started to see Lamar not run the football, not be a part of design plays to run the football. And I don't know where Keaton Mitchell is on this side, but Lamar running in the first quarter and running ragged isn't something that I don't say you have to worry about. It's not something they do. You have to worry about it, but it's not the way the Ravens scheme it up lately, that they're doing a lot to protect a, you know, a valuable investment, as Roger Dorn once said in Your Fair City back in the
yeah,
day.
Yeah, well, you know, the other thing too is like Sione Takitaki, who was drafted by John Dorsey years ago. He's having a fantastic season. They brought in Za'Darius Smith. They stole him from the Minnesota Vikings. You know, he's outstanding. Shelby Harris, who they added late in the process there. He had a sack the other day. So you're seeing the pieces and parts and the investment on that side of the ball pay dividends. And I think that what the Browns are really waiting for is they're waiting for the big investment on the offensive side of the ball to really start to play some of those dividends. And obviously I'm referring to Deshaun Watson, but let's be honest about that first Browns Ravens game. 14 of those points came because of Dorian Thompson turnovers and made life really, really easy on Lamar Jackson and that Ravens offense. They did not have long fields to work with.
The Ravens also are missing like 7 or 8 starters. I mean, right. It's a different team right now. And that's what I've written and said the last couple of weeks, is that the Ravens have really rounded into being as formidable as they can be, because they're as healthy as they can be. And they've always had a knack for getting good players here and being able to bring in players. But I don't think anybody realized Kyle Van Noy and Jadeveon Clowney would be like this. I think we all looked at the wide receiver room and thought the offense might be the stronger side of the ball. The defense has been the stronger and certainly the more consistent side of the ball here as well. That's what makes this an interesting fight, because takeaways are going to be the key to the game to me on Sunday. Taking the ball away, you're going to win the game, and it's going to be about defenses having offenses make mistakes. And I guess the thought would be the Browns are missing their biggest weapon, but so are the Ravens in regard to the running backs. I mean, both these teams lost their real running backs real late or real early in your case. And I think that that's a devastating thing to try to overcome, because you don't really have a running back two that emulates running back one.
Yeah, and so what the Browns have tried to do with the running game, they're trying to recreate Nick Chubb in the aggregate, and so they've got three guys right now running the ball, Jerome Ford, Kareem Hunt, and Pierre Strong, mixing in, you know, whatever gadgetry that Kevin Stefanski draws up for, you know, Marquise Goodwin, who has a concussion, so we don't know if he's going to be available this week, or Elijah Moore, who they traded their second-round pick to bring him in from the New York Jets. The problem is the stuff that with Moore hadn't worked that great. Like, it just, it hasn't. I'm just being honest about it. Like, during training camp and the offseason, it was really exciting to watch him practice. Like, oh man, this guy's going to be electric. And then they're running it during games, and it's not as electric as we thought it was going to be. And that's just
sounds like Odell Beckham here, except we electriced him for $15 million a year. So,
yeah, well, you know, I'll give you a little tip on Jadeveon Clowney. Get everything out of him you can this year, and then let him walk in the offseason, because that's what happened with the Browns. Like, they got one really great year out of him, and they brought him back, and the second year was just, it did not go well. And in fact, he, you know, ended up talking his way out of Cleveland. With some of the things he said toward the end of the season, ripping Myles Garrett, who was a really good teammate to him, and ripping the organization for, prioritizing Myles Garrett allegedly and things like that. So he wore out his welcome.
There's some other Cleveland guys on our Beckham too, right? I mean, we got some guys that were Browns. That hasn't always been the case.
I call this year's Ravens team the disgruntled Browns. Because that's, I mean, you know, Odell, what, his first touchdown in that blowout over Seattle this past weekend. But yeah, I mean, I feel like Odell is more name than he is superstar now.
I agree wholeheartedly, but that players love him. They love that star. He caught a touchdown pass from the backup quarterback, and Lamar Jackson looked like they had won the Super Bowl. I've never seen Lamar so enthusiastic.
Odell was beloved here after his father, you know, put out that video critical of, you know, Baker Mayfield and whatnot. And here's how beloved he was, because in typical locker rooms, when you have a guy that quits on a team and wants to leave and things like that while you're trying to win and compete, usually that locker room turns against you. Well, everyone except for Baker Mayfield were like, we would take Odell back here in a heartbeat. We want him back. That is how beloved he is. So everywhere he's gone, like, and I don't know where it came from. Like, I'm not the biggest Odell fan, but there was this narrative. I remember when the Browns traded for him and I was, you know, trying to get some background information on the guy, just, you know, seeing what we're getting. And all I heard, you know, what a cancer. He's a pain in the backside, this, that, and the other. And then my dealings with Odell were the complete opposite. Like, yeah, he was a little bit of a diva on the practice field. Well, but most star wide receivers are divas. That just comes with the territory, the one-handed catches and stuff like that, but whatever. But he was always respectful to the media and to reporters and made himself available to us. His teammates absolutely loved him. I certainly did not agree with how he and his father handled his exit from Cleveland, and I ripped him accordingly for that. But like, this reputation that he's a locker room cancer and he's bad for morale and he's a me guy and things like, I got to be honest with you, Nestor, and I got to be fair. That is not what I saw with Odell. And I think that that's why he's so beloved within locker rooms. He's a generous teammate, always hooking his teammates up with goodies and things like that. You know, he puts in the work. Puts in the time off the field to be great. You know, he made his money. He didn't have to work his way back from injuries, and he did. He busted his butt, came back from an injury with the Browns actually earlier because of all the work he did.
Well, he won a Super Bowl after he left you, right? So, I mean, literally, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I just don't understand that. I kind of feel like that in our business now, that we're starting to, like, the criticism of these athletes isn't like really tangible, legitimate criticism. It's more like hate criticism. You know what I mean? Like being a hater, just, you know, picking on a guy for the sake of picking on a guy. And yeah, Odell's a lightning rod, but like I said, I have to be fair and objective about it. And the guy, aside from his exit from the Browns, he was fantastic to deal with in the media and thoughtful, and his teammates absolutely adored him. So I don't know where he got that reputation that he's supposedly some kind of terrible guy in cancer, because I think that that is one of the most egregious, unfair things the media has done to a player.
Darryl Ryder is here. He is Right or Wrong Fan. No one covers the Cleveland Browns, and occasionally the Indians and the Cavaliers and some other things, as well as he does out in the land of Cleveland. Make sure you're following him out on social media if you're interested in the game, before the game, after the game, all that stuff. If the Browns get back into this thing somehow. How about these three teams? I mean, Cincinnati surging, Cleveland surging, Steelers winning. They win. They find ways to win. And then the Ravens, maybe a cut above on the talent level or the expectation level or whatever. But now this week, the Ravens get these two big games. Man, the Ravens have a tough schedule. I mean, they got to go out to L.A. They got to go out to San Francisco. They got to go down to Jacksonville. They got Miami coming in. They got Pittsburgh coming in here. They got you and Cincinnati. I mean, between Cincinnati and Baltimore, two of the tougher schedules left the rest of the way. It's a nice narrative to say 7-2, late bye, full health, all, you know, a lot of good things going on here in the land of purple when you're winning 37-3 and beating up on NFC playoff caliber teams in Seattle and Detroit a couple weeks ago. You know, this is usually where the boat hits some rocks a little bit. I mean, I don't look up and say, well, they're just going to be 11-2. If they are,
right,
they'll get my respect and love, but if they got to get through these two games, and this division always sort of plays out that, they lost 28-3 with some chump quarterback a month, 2 months ago, and this and that. I have a feeling at 3:45, there's a football game on Sunday, and I have a feeling it's even worse on Thursday night when Joe Burrow comes in here healthier than he was the last time. I think we're going to see two different versions of the teams than we saw 2 months ago.
Well, to your point, yeah. I mean, that first meeting between the Browns and Ravens, you know, Deshaun wasn't on the field and the Ravens were missing half their team. Now the Ravens are relatively healthy. Deshaun is back for the Browns. I picked Baltimore in training camp to win the division. And I thought that they were going to be at least a divisional playoff team. In other words, they get through wild card weekend and they're among the final four in the conference, because I thought if healthy, they are one of the better teams in the conference right now with the way they're playing. I'm thinking they might go to the Super Bowl this year. You know, it feels like Kansas City's ripe to be knocked off this year. And
it looks like Buffalo's just sort of, you know, Buffalo's,
I think Buffalo's cooked. Their window is closing on them a little bit, even though they do have Josh Allen. But I look at Cincinnati. Cincinnati scares me too, because they are surging. Whatever it is, they start slow, and then once October hits, lo and behold, they rise from the dead. The Steelers, I don't know what they're drinking in Pittsburgh. They just won't die. Like every time we think the Steelers are dead, they're going nowhere, whatever. Mike Tomlin, I don't know if it's voodoo. I don't know what it is, but the Steelers just will not go away. And they find ways to win. So they play some of the most disgusting, ugly football on the planet. But you know what? It's beautiful to them because they win football games. So, you know, if the playoffs started now, as you mentioned, like all four of these teams in this division, they're in. Baltimore's the number two seed behind Kansas City. You got Pittsburgh, the number five seed. The only reason why is because they beat the Browns in week two. The Browns are the sixth seed. The Bengals are the seventh seed, right? And obviously a lot can change in 1 to 2 weeks here, but this division is living up to the hype. It's the only division that has every team with a winning record in the NFL. And look, I think I picked the Steelers to finish last, but I said, hey, Steelers might finish last in this division, but they may have 9 or 10 wins when they do it. Like that is just how competitive this AFC North is. The Browns, you mentioned, you know, the Ravens schedule, you know, the Browns, they got you guys next week. Then they got to come home for Pittsburgh, back-to-back weeks on the West Coast with Denver and the Rams. They're actually going to stay out in on the West Coast that week to get ready for the Rams game. They come home from Jacksonville. That's going to be a dogfight. Then they've got Chicago at home, travel to Houston, the Texans. With C.J. Stroud, I did not think Houston was going to be as good as they are, as fast as they are, but that's going to be a tough game for them. Then the Jets offense stinks, but boy, the Jets defense is really, really, really good. You want to talk about one injury completely destroying a season, the Aaron Rodgers injury.
Aaron Rodgers will be playing by then, dude.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I mean, he's out there throwing footballs before the Monday night game. And then, of course, the Browns wrap up against the one team in the division they can beat on a regular basis, and that's Cincinnati. So the Browns schedule, like when a couple of weeks ago, I was looking, I was like, oh, well, this schedule, they're going to get fat toward the end. But now as the season's kind of coming into the focus, I'm looking at the Browns schedule. I'm like, this is a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be a couple of weeks ago. So this is a really good competitive division all around. And dare I say, a good Browns football team is coming to Baltimore, and they're going to be looking to upset the Ravens. And I think that they've got just as good a chance to do it. I don't know that they're going to do it, but I do feel like that this is going to be a fun football game to watch, especially with these two defenses going back and forth.
We got all the AFC North teams playing at the same time at 1 o'clock. The Packers are in Pittsburgh. Steelers are 3-point favorite to win again. Bengals are 7-point favorite at home against C.J. Stroud, and they're playing well, and we'll see them next Thursday night. Darryl Reiter is here. He is in the land of Cleve that rocks, by the way. I did not make the Tremont trip out there for some breakfast or out to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, although I did see the entries. I'll get out there again soon. Last thing before I let you go, because you do cover all sports. By the way, your bobblehead collection, dude. I mean, I have the belt buckles here, and I don't put them on the screen or whatnot, but is there one that's more valuable? I mean, do you have like a 1957 Chief Wahoo bobblehead? Do you have anything that's a valuable one, or are they just all modern giveaways?
Well, they are modern giveaways, but I actually had to insure my bobblehead collection because I have some LeBron. I have every LeBron bobblehead the Cavaliers gave away, and those are worth something today. Obviously, the NBA championship bobbleheads have some value to them. Some of the Indians and Guardians bobbleheads, like I've got the first set that they ever gave away. That's pretty valuable. I got some pretty valuable bobbleheads in the case. I keep the cases locked and things like that. But I actually
you vacuum once in a while. You don't get that, you know, lint in there, right?
Little dustbuster in there, you know, that little hand thing. You know,
that's why it looks so good. I thought I was talking to Geddy Lee. Did you see the Geddy Lee shot in the Geddy Lee Emporium where he's doing the Christie's auction? Go check the picture out. But you look in there. The one thing I see with Geddy, he has a 1993 All-Star Game duffel bag with the logo on it right next to him in the shot with all the Negro League Baseball autographs. He has presidents. He has all of this baseball stuff that he's auctioning off. And I saw a thing, and I met Geddy in the buffet line at the gala in front of the Science Center. You never forget the moment you run into Geddy Lee over some Eastern Shore corn, you know, and you're like, hey, Geddy. So Geddy's done the show and all that. And but Geddy's my guy. But the image of your office does sort of look a little bit like the Geddy Lee thing that's circulating this week. Just so you know.
Got a little bit of a museum feel. I got a Willie Mays baseball in the case over there.
Willie Mays Hayes?
No, Willie Mays. The Willie Mays.
Run like Hayes, hit like Mays, you know.
You hit like, well, like,
yeah, I know, you know,
we can't say that
same way they were playing when they were dragging the field in the beginning. To the baseball side, which is really where I wanted to take this conversation to make you laugh, but Tito leaving, Yeah, really kind of an end of an era there. And you talk about winning 100 games here and having two playoff games and stinking and never making it. You know, Tito got him close. Grover before that, who spent time here. And I think back to those moments with Albert Bell in the dugout with Hannah Storm. And like, I was at all. By the way, the snow game in 95 sort of showed up on my timeline a couple of weeks ago. Me and Chris Berman in the snow. So I think of baseball and the Guardians. And I saw that there's like $250 million a stadium. I saw the Erector set into the Jake there. They're doing things there. Yep. But what's the state of baseball in the land of Cleve?
Yeah, well, so they're going to be in an ownership transition here in the next 3 to 4 years.
Oh, we can only hope for that here. Can we just have, please? Yes.
You know, the ballpark's undergoing, it's actually $430 million of work that's going on. 210 of that is a renovation, and then the rest of the other 200 plus million is capital improvements. But they're basically turning the upper deck in right field and down the left field line into an outdoor bar. Because I guess kids today, they don't want to sit in chairs and watch a baseball game.
That would have been way better sitting with Eric Singer, who was the drummer from Kiss, up in there than I was up in the right field roof with Kevin Eck the night before Art Modell brought the Browns here. Like, I literally was at that game. I freezing my ass off up in the upper deck.
You know what, the great Cleveland Baltimore baseball memory that lives to this day and brings a smile on my
Roberto
face.
Alomar?
No, Marquise Grissom hitting the home run to knock you guys out of the playoffs and send the Indians to the World Series.
That was Tony Fernandez.
Yeah, Tony Fernandez in the 11th
late
inning.
Late, great Tony Fernandez. Yeah.
So
yeah, I remember that too.
Sent you guys home for the winter and sent the Indians back to the
I got assaulted by a listener in Hooters 2 hours after
Did
that.
You?
Yeah, so, it was a bad night. But, I almost killed someone that night, like literally.
Yeah, but you know, this they got, you know, Tito's done. He's not retired. You're going to see Tito in a dugout somewhere in the
Really? Game. You think
so? Oh, 100%. He's in his mid 60s. He's still got the passion for the game, but he had a lot of health issues in recent years here that impacted.
He didn't look healthy. He looked in pain 24 hours a day.
Yeah, so he's out. They hired Stephen Vogt. He was the Mariners bullpen coach, former catcher, former All-Star catcher, two-time All-Star, 10-year major leaguer. You know, spent a lot of time with the Oakland A's as a player and things like that. So he's the new manager of the ball club. Certainly not going to make what Terry Francona made because Tito was one of the highest paid managers.
He's no Craig Counsell.
Yeah, he's no Craig Counsell, did not get $8 million a year from the Cleveland Guardians. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what his fingerprints are going to look like on this organization and this ball club and how he fits with this front office. I thought Tito and the front office fit, you know, well together, and they were very successful. I mean, Tito left as the winningest manager in Cleveland baseball history. You know, they every year they were in contention. I think it was, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but it was like 25 games in his 11 years that the Guardians were not mathematically alive for a postseason berth. Think about that. That's incredible. They had a 22 game win streak under him. They went to the World Series. Granted, they did blow a 3-1 lead to the Cubs. That still stings, but like, I mean, it was one of the most successful eras in Cleveland baseball history under Terry Francona. So it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, Vogt, who's like around 38, 39 years old, can he come in and kind of pick up where Tito left off and continue this forward? Or are they going to go through a transitional period here where they have a season like they did last year, where, you know, they're hovering around 500 or a little below 500 and, you know, whatever, but this is going to be a very interesting couple of years with the impending ownership change that's going to take place once the ballpark gets completely renovated and basically turned into a beer garden. New seats, though. They're putting in all brand new seats because, well, as I talked to some of the old Gateway employees, and they're like, we got sick and tired of fixing these seats. Like, the rust is so bad, the bolts are fused, and all this other.
Cleveland winters are a bitch, dude. I mean, you don't sit outside. They do.
They are brutal. So yes, the ballpark's getting a pretty big facelift. They're getting new clubhouses next off season. The team executive office building is getting completely gutted. By the way, you're going to know it's Progressive Field because they're adding like 20 more Progressive Field signs and video boards to the outside of the ballpark. Remember the scene in Major League 2 where they come out of the dugout and Harry Dole goes, well, Roger Dorn's turned the place into the Yellow Pages. Well, that's what Progressive Field looks like. There are ads everywhere. The ballpark is literally that scene in Maine. If you're looking for a good proctologist, come on, check out right center field. Like, that's what it feels like when you walk into Progressive Field because you're just assaulted with all of these, you know, these ads. But hey, that's small market baseball for you. They got to get their revenue, you know, wherever they can get it. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting transition, both ownership wise in the coming years, and then now going from Tito to vote in the dugout.
Darryl Ryder just said, small market baseball, you got to get your revenue wherever you can get. John Angelos, thanks for coming on and being a part of that, making the case for all things moving our team to Nashville at some point. Darryl, I love having you on, man. It's a shame that the Browns and the Ravens and the Orioles and Indians don't get together more often. But I'll come out and see you at the Hall of Fame, and I'll come out. They'll find, like, Pat Benatar will be, something will be happening in Cleveland will get me out there. But it's always good to see you, and it's great to have you on and to get your perspective on all things. Yashish Schwartz, you give him my love, all right?
I will tell him you said hello.
Land of Cleves, where they still play baseball. I don't know how many times, if I was on the radio, I do know because we changed from Colts to Ravens, and I did in the 90s say Colts a couple of times. I don't know if they changed the name of my baseball team if I could ever get used to it, but God bless all of you in Cleveland. Cleveland baseball, it's like Washington football, it's what I would say. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, getting ready for Browns, Ravens, Lukes and Owings Mills, and I'm here at BaltimorePositive.com.